Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really happy to have as my guest today Alden Bryant. Alden Bryant is a co-founder and president of the Earth Regeneration Society here in Berkeley, California, and he has been involved for a very long time on this issue, climate change and stabilization. Actually, our former representative to Congress, Ronald Dellums, introduced him as the number one ecologist in the United States, referring to Alden Bryant's authorship of the first bill in any government putting forth a soil, forest, and energy program way back in 1992. This was to reduce atmospheric carbon dioxide and work to stabilize the climate extremes facing us. He also authored and helped lobby through a resolution with the National Convention of the AFL CIO stressing climate, food, and jobs in their 1987 platform, and co-sponsored a meeting in the United Nations building in New York on the full climate change facing us, following which the UN ambassador from Malta, co-sponsoring the meeting, introduced the two resolutions to the UN, which resulted in the UN summit at Rio in June 1992, out of which we got the climate treaty. So Alden Bryant has been at this for a very long time when a lot of people weren't talking about it at all. And I'm really happy to be able to talk to you today, Alden. I want to welcome you and ask you to say a few words about how you got into this subject, which is turning out to be, as you said, such an incredibly important subject that most people don't pay too much attention to or know enough about, and it's very serious.
Well, Sue, I'm so glad to be sitting with you again and getting into this and opening things up. Here we are at one of the most critical times of the world's history. There's so much going on with violence and wars and military and lack of care of the people at home. And here's a subject that's the heart of all of this, and we'll get into it a little.
So did you realize that way back when people weren't even talking about it? Yeah, what do you think about that? Do you think the subject has been kind of repressed or not?
Well, you know, such a tremendous flow of history of all kinds of conflicts going on, and it's good to try and put it simply here in a brief interview. In the 70s, well, actually, I've been clear ever since I was 14 that we got to have a better life in many ways. And in the 70s, I was very involved in solar developments, and I was a board of directors of the two solar groups in the state, Northern California Solar Energy Association and the California Solar Industries Association. I was liaison. My main goal then was to see what can we do with very fine, large-scale solar power development and replace nuclear and stop producing nuclear plants and nuclear waste and the effect in our whole lives. So that's where it came from. And then in the early, about 79, I was getting mail from people around the country. I'd been nationally, internationally in solar meetings. So I was starting to get mail. And they're talking about the climate change that's going on. And I remember talking to a psychotherapist at one point, a friend, a person, and I said, you know, should I get involved in this stuff? And she said, follow your vision. And we did, and that's what later produced the climate treaty in the United Nations.
I think in some ways it's been a kind of a controversy about what's going on, and it's something's going on, that's for sure. What do you think it is?
There's the broadest possible view of the major six, seven, eight major elements into influencing the climate. This is what we've had to be concerned about. Let me just refer to an origin and then how we moved along. And then we want to end up today with how do we deal with all this and where do we try and fit things together. So where it began, somehow I ended up in a local radio station. Catherine Webb gave me a one-hour interview in 1979. And following that, about 26 people came together, mostly in different science areas. And the main question before us was, what is physically happening with the climate change? And so there was a couple of years of dealing with this and looking into things and meetings around the world. And we set up the Earth Regeneration Society to bring about climate stabilization the best we could. That was formed in 1983 and April 22nd, which is still looked at as an Earth Day. It just so happened. So here we are. So that's where it started. And then we had a period from 83 up to 1992 when we got the climate treaty from the United Nations. So it's very clear to us that here we are at the end of the interglacial of around 10,000 years. And some of the best geological data going back, say, 900,000 years shows that the glacial periods run from about 70 to 120,000 years. And we were at the end of one, and about 18,000 years of the ice melting off here in the northern hemisphere primarily, and then going into over 10,000 years of an interglacial period. Now, we're at the end of that, and we're seeing all kinds of extreme signs of change in heat coming up from the equator, freezing coming down from the polar areas, and where they meet, look at the intensity of what's happening in the middle latitudes of the world on floods, freezing, heat spells, drought, far more fires, forest fires, even more earthquakes. There's different pressures someplace. So here's his history, and I'd just like to mention that where we started and give credit to a Canadian, Professor Alexis Draimanis, University of Western Ontario, describing how we are at the end of the interglacial. Dr. Bertrand Schultz, who was head of the Academy of Science in his state in Nebraska, and his main field was in the glacial histories in the world. And he said, as far as we can tell, we are moving into this next glacial period, but further research along the way will tell us all the things that are happening. Then came Professor Kenneth Watt from UC Davis, who is Canadian and has spent his life here, and he's a world figure. He's now retired, but he helped form the Earth Regeneration Society. And he's very strong on what is happening and looking at data as a very basic research person. His findings were, in the period of 82, 3, 4, was that basically the northern part of our continent is cooling. What you are seeing that as cities are like heat islands, and the term was developed, in cities you have far more heat with the vehicles, the roads, the buildings, and paved areas. And so if you go outside of the cities and go to some federal temperature location points away from the heat islands, you find that our northern hemisphere is cooling, and the most steady areas is along the Pacific Ocean here, Washington, Oregon, California. So these are some of his findings. And then the fourth person that was very fundamental was Viktor Kovda of the Soviet Union, who was their main soil scientist and also very much into climate conditions. And they felt that, yes, we are certainly moving into greater cooling conditions. He sees this in many ways, and he encourages what we are doing in this country. So that's some of the origin. And now we go ahead to what happened since then.
People refer to global warming now. People kind of know that term, even people who don't know much about it. I have that impression. I'm not sure. But there was a whole controversy whether it's getting warmer or colder. I don't know if there's still much controversy about that something's happening. And again, I'm interested to know whether you think that there's been any kind of repression of information. And maybe there hasn't been, but...
Well, there's a very clear factual history, and this is very well understood along the way. In about 73, we have these four science people in different parts of the world saying, yes, we're at the end of the interglacial, there's going to be serious changes, and we're going to have to deal with it. In 74, the United States CIA Research Department issued a report saying that, yes, the climate is changing, it's going to knock out food supplies and destroy and destabilize governments. And this was about a 30-page report that circulated all over the country, but it was a research paper. It just had its own meaning, but now 2 years later...
That was 74.
74. Now 2 years later, in 76, a retired scientist with the Navy who was close with the Oil Investors Association people, Dr. Irving Kaplan, pointed out that there was a meeting of some of the top people in the Oil Investors Association back east in this country, and they said, we do not want to hear the word glaciation ever again. We want no impact on the operation, our operations in the oil industry. Therefore, we're going to push just warming. We know it's warming from carbon dioxide increase, and we don't know. It might melt poles, and it might raise oceans. And so as a result, there was very strong political pressure that nobody used start talking about glaciation. And there were members of the Federal Energy Department at that time who had been students, Professor Kenneth Watt at Davis. And when they were back visiting with him, they pointed out very strong political pressure. You don't mention glaciation. You just use the word warming. But what happened in the years following, there were literally hundreds of people that would speak to warming and come on with maybe look at two variables or three and different combinations of things and cause a great deal of just confusion in the public's part so that really nobody was going to move on stopping the emission of carbon dioxide. So we're entering a phase from 1974, 5, and 6, a phase of many people, literally hundreds, were encouraged to come on and talk about warming and raise one, two, three aspects that bear on that. But it came out with such a mixture of ideas and what might or might not happen and when that the public's totally confused. So we did not have any real movement to rebuild. The basic handling of stabilizing climate goes back to the minerals in the soil being badly depleted during the 10,000 years of the interglacial period, washed down by rain and depleted, so a lot of it's deeper underground. But the forests are dying from just lack of mineral content. And so this is the what you're facing at the end of an interglacial. And as the forests tend to die off and burn more, and then as humans come along and add burning coal and oil, increasing the carbon dioxide even faster than nature would be doing, then we're bringing on this whole effect of the heat being caught in the equatorial areas and much more warming and evaporation. And 4 or 5 years later, satellites were referring to additional rivers of moisture moving from the equator up to the polar areas. They could see far more moving. So here is a process of the warming in the lower latitudes, meaning carrying far more moisture to these polar areas, which are like the Antarctic, is what, below 60, 80, 90 or more degrees below zero all the time. They were building 4 to 5 feet more of ice each year for the last half of the last century. And this was measurable and vision. We had photographs. So this was happening in the Antarctic. And then on the Greenland big ice mass there, the U.S. military had stations in there in the summers, and they were finding had to raise them about 5 feet every year. And this was a period somewhere in the later 1980s, I believe. So these things were going on, and that was the nature of the overall process. And the opposite is to come in and rebuild the forest to take out the carbon dioxide and to work seriously with rebuilding the soil under those forests. And that's not an idle comment. The Academy of Science in the, well, in the headquarters in Vienna, Austria. They had two scientists actually putting good rock dust back in the forest and bringing the dying forest back to life. And Dr. Gernot Graefe was on our board of advisors and a good friend. In other words, we had international contacts in all of our work. So here's this whole overall basic picture of bringing the soils back, bringing the forest back, and then moving into alternative energy that does not emit carbon dioxide.
I want to remind people that my guest is Alden Bryant, who is president and co-founder of the Earth Regeneration Society here in based in Berkeley, California. And Alden, when we did this interview, the first interview I did with you, it was a good 20 years ago, and I remember that you talked about remineralizing, and I think I've been really conscious about eating organic food since then, because you really made the point that we weren't getting the minerals out that we needed them, and even if we, you know, got ate fresh vegetables kind of thing. That, and then I interviewed somebody from the Congo who was talking about people having nothing to eat and eating grass, and I remember just crying, literally crying. And, of course, that was 20 years ago, and now is 2003. So I haven't heard that people are remineralizing the soil in any major way. And, of course, we know they're cutting down trees, not planting more trees in general. I mean, of course, some people are planting trees, but the overall trend is not looking good.
Well, let's touch on something today and then go back and just in passing mention that all of our efforts in international meetings came together in a meeting in the United Nations in December of 1988, sponsored by the Earth Regeneration Society and Dr. Harry Lerner of a group that works with the United Nations, and the ambassador of Malta as the UN representative. So out of that meeting came the Malta putting in the resolutions that set up the Rio summit, and we got the climate treaty. So there was the 1992, June of 92 in Rio. Based on that, we've had the tremendous meetings in Prague and The Hague and now Johannesburg, and this is from our years of work. And that we put everything we had into it, it just had to be done. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned about what's happening with the soil. So I'd like to jump ahead to something going on the last couple of years. There's a man, Pedro Sanchez, here at in Berkeley, who is a world figure and given some very fine world recognition for rebuilding agriculture in different countries, in different continents. His work in Africa with countries there in which not only they went in to strengthen the natural local agriculture, but he also found mineral reserves of minerals that were very helpful and necessary, and he brought that into the agricultural development programs in those African countries. And he was written up for that, and he was down at Johannesburg at the meeting. And so this is part of what is going on. And even here in Berkeley, we have people, even in the school system, wanting to refurbish all their lands and earth and schools and with good remineralization.
Well, it's always good to hear good things, Alden Bryant. Do you think they're enough? I mean, that's a stupid question because I know they're not.
Well, we're making roaring progress of about 2%. In the last 20 years, just touching the surface of maybe hundreds and hundreds of efforts to bring down carbon dioxide. And Germany is one of the finest centers in that. And several other countries are doing quite an effort. And then the major opposition, of course, is coming from the major oil and nuclear industries in the United States, as showing up at Johannesburg or at The Hague and on, even back through Prague and so on. But now, at the same time, there are some people such as with the Pew Foundation here in this country where there's a woman there who has done a fine job of talking to the CEOs, the heads of large corporations, and in a number of cases, arriving at an understanding where they change their policies and go into some real efforts on remediation work and cutting back on carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. And understanding what they're doing and why they're doing it. So there's a lot of positive things happening all the time.
Yeah. That's great. I just thought of something I wanted to ask you about, which is that you're talking about the glaciers were getting larger, but now they're melting, are they not? I remember hearing about this huge, enormous piece dropping off, and I heard about that. I'm sure much more than that is happening.
All right, let's sort of anybody listening to the program, step back a bit in your thinking and say, well, here's a big round globe. All right, where the warm air is coming up from the equators and the warm moisture coming up in certain areas, in certain drought, serious drought, like in the parts of Africa, where that's happening, you're going to be melting glacial deposits, whether it's Switzerland or other areas in the middle latitudes, or even Kilimanjaro is melting back. So this is a part of the picture. And we got to mix in here some very serious articles that have come out in the last few years about the currents in the ocean, and bringing out through Woods Hole Institute, which is a very foremost group in this country, trying to deal with what's really going on under the limitations of the pressure of you don't recognize glaciation as a process that you go into slowly and very dramatically. There's an institute in this country that has been trying to measure the loss in the world due to the climate change. And 20 years ago, they're saying maybe 1 or 2 billion years of direct loss. 20 years later, nearly $100 billion of direct loss from the floods and the fires and the freezing and the drought conditions. But they cannot deal with what happens to those families in the future. If they have no farm, if they have no food, if they have their roads are not working, and where they work is destroyed. All right, all of this. So that's what's going on.
I just was reading about how from the information from the Woods Hole Institute, that the whole northeast and even the ocean might freeze, making it totally impossible to have agriculture. And, of course, the droughts and everything make it really hard, too. So you're just alluding to feeding people and the upset of life as we know it, basically.
You certainly touched on that well. The people at Woods Hole Institute here recently, like Robert Gagosian there, are the newspapers in this country. What's happening is that a lot of the thin ice around the North Pole has been melting. And one study out in the published is they talk about last 40 years and about 40% of that thin ice around the North Pole area melting. Another study says, they look back maybe 25 years, and the worst that has happened is last year were about 16% less ice coverage at the end of the summer than they usually expect. So here's some rather different types of information. But they are looking at just these variables about polar ice, and then where does it go when it melts, and where does that fresh water go? Now, that's the key to what's happening here, the dramatic thing. So more fresh water starts moving southward from the pole, and it meets the warm current coming up from the southern latitudes along the between North America and Europe. So that warm water usually evaporates as it gets higher up here into colder, colder areas and becomes more salty, more dense, and sinks down. And then over the last many centuries, it would flow back in a deeper channel to the southern latitudes and then be coming back in a circle later, bringing heat and warmth necessary in North America and in Europe. So the point is, with this 40% cut back the ice at the end of the summer, means if that cycle doesn't continue and that warm water coming up gets all the fresh water going into it, it does not sink and go back down. It does not bring warmth back up here, and therefore you're going to make it with five. They talk about 5 degree reduction in temperature, and you freeze all kinds of areas, rivers, ocean areas, and cut out agriculture. It talks about 60% of the world's economy is based in these areas.
And it could happen real fast, the next 5 or 10 years. Just boing, it could just suddenly shift.
That's their warning, and that's in the newspaper. So somewhere as you move forward and think about the all these different variables brought forward and discussed, then at this time there's been a response by a World War II veteran here in Berkeley. And the last, it's Howard Jeter, J-E-T-E-R, and I think it's very fair to point out that he produced and is circulating now, on the web and around the world. It says Jeter Plan, and it says for the United States, there's serious problems of taking care of the veterans from the first 1991 war in Iraq, the depleted uranium that is terrible loss for the people there, and a good part of 200,000 GIs in this country. And when they're married and came back, many of their children are born deformed from the impact of that stuff. So here's a plan saying no more military expenditures overseas by the U.S., but turn our funds completely into caring for the veterans and their families and to go on down the line for health care, employment, and annual decent wages for people to live on, housing for people, full employment, and a federal income tax similar to the World War II period. I'm a World War II veteran also, and when you came out in 1946, there was a certain pattern. And the point here in the Jeter Plan is that we are in a far more serious condition now due to not only just climate, but the effect on the upper ozone level, the effect of all the pollution areas in our lives and illnesses. We are in a far more serious area than World War II, and the same, it's suggesting we consider the same income tax pattern. And there's practically tremendous increase in the federal funding, and here's what it's needed for. So that is something that is being circulated recently, and may people consider it. But now this whole question of climate and bringing forward a 15-year crash program for the United Nations. And this is the proposal that I wrote up and sent down to Johannesburg, and four or five friends took it there. You know, our Congressman Dennis Kucinich was back here speaking, and during a public program I asked him would he support a 15-year crash program in the UN on rebuilding forests for every country and getting out of emitting carbon dioxide with new technologies. He said certainly he would, and he said yes, I heard about that proposal when I was in Johannesburg. The circle is going around. And what that means is that to bring together people in all countries through a resolution in the General Assembly of the UN, 15-year crash program, and every country have targets on new forests and energy change based on their history, not just the figures that we're planning to publish, but develop their own, if they wish, of course. But that means coming together internationally around technologies, resources, personnel that know how to deal with this stuff, and a kind of interrelation that we've never had before. But where do we go if we don't do it?
Yeah, really. Well, it's a political will and of enough people making enough of an impact. And so a lot of times people say they don't know what to do, so it's very good to know what to do. So our time is up, Alden Bryant. I'm sorry, there's so much more we could talk about, but it is up. So I'd like to give your phone number in case anybody calls you, your phone number and fax in case anybody wants to get in touch with you. It's 510-527-9716 is the phone number. The fax is 510-559-8410. That's telephone 510-527-9716. And the fax is 510-559-8410. So thank you so much, Alden Bryant, President of the Earth Regeneration Society, Incorporated here in Berkeley, California. It's been most interesting. Thanks, Alden.
I'm very glad to be here. Thanks.
And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.